Federal officials say encryption probably wouldn't have mattered in the case of the heist of nearly 22 million background investigation records from the Office of Personnel Management. But that's no excuse for not encrypting the data anyway. A new system for processing government security clearances will include encryption and a few other changes. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about what we know so far in this week's edition of Inside the DoD Reporter's Notebook. And Jared, what do we know so far?
Well, encryption is really the main thing, and I think that's key. You know, we remember the days after the OPM breach was first announced last year. There were security experts everywhere, and a lot of sort of lay folks just saying, what? This data was not encrypted in the first place? Federal officials say in this particular case, it would not have necessarily mattered just because of the way that the foreign nation state hackers made their way into the OPM system and the kind of access that they had at the time that they got in. But in any case, there will be encryption in this system, and I would refer folks to Nicole Lagrisco's story that went up on Friday for more details on the overall, you know, the new National Background Investigations Bureau that's going to take over background investigations as part of a set of reforms that OMB and the rest of the executive branch announced on Friday. But the piece of it that DoD is going to be in charge of is the design of the IT system and cybersecurity. They say that the cybersecurity of this new system is still a work in progress, and we don't know when it's going to be up and running, is going to be built to national security standards, which means that the data in the system will be encrypted when it's stored. So data at rest, it will also have data in transit encryption. So that's one thing that we know about this new system. Another thing we know that, again, was kind of a surprise when the details about the OPM breach came out is that not all of the background investigation records will necessarily be stored online. And I think it was a surprise to a lot of people, myself included, that all 22 million of these background investigation records dating back to the year 2000 were all stored in a system that was connected to the internet, not necessarily directly, but at least accessible via the internet, which is, of course, why people were able to steal all of these records from the other side of the world. So DoD says part of the cybersecurity protections that they're going to put in place in this new system that they are in charge of designing is that at least some portion of these background investigation documents will be stored either offline or in some sort of segregated, more protected, think air-gapped system, so that they're not all on a system that's directly connected to the internet. Ostensibly, at least, some of the records are going to need to be internet accessible because you're going to want to have people be able to get in and look at some of those records over things like virtual private networks if, say, they're a contractor that's working on the records, but it doesn't mean you have to necessarily need to have 15 years worth all stored in the same place.
I guess they could make an optical jukebox out of most of it and stick that in a closet somewhere. But earlier you said that the encryption would not have prevented what was taken by the thieves earlier. Is DoD doing this just because everyone says, let's do encryption, or because they feel this will also be an improvement?
Well, I think, remember, one of the reasons that OPM said that the records were not encrypted in the first place is that they were using a lot of very old legacy hardware. And if you had applied encryption to all of these records, given the infrastructure that they had, it would have brought the operation of the system to a halt, to encrypt and decrypt each one of these records every time there was a transaction with someone either saving data to the record or extracting data from it. Now that they've got a chance to start from ground zero and build a brand new system from the ground up with state-of-the-art hardware, there's no good reason, first of all, not to have encryption. And again, it's a basic national security system practice to do that on anything that's going to hold a lot of sensitive records. And it's, boy, hard to think of records that are much more sensitive than this. As to why it wouldn't have mattered, I mean, I think there's still some ambiguity about that. But from what we know, the way that the hackers made their way into the system in order to pull off this massive breach was by using a username and password that was stolen from a contractor who had pretty much full administrative access to the system that held all these background investigation records. Ostensibly, you know, you would imagine that when they design the new system, there's going to be some sort of least privilege permissioning system set up so that no one person's login information holds the keys to the entire kingdom. Hopefully there will be some sort of two-factor authentication built in there too as well, but this is me just speculating. We really don't know what this system's going to look like when it's all said and done, because we don't know when it's going to be up and running.
We're speaking with Federal News Radio's DoD reporter Jared Serbu. And to turn this whole thing around, you mentioned also in your column today that the Air Force is claiming it has the new cyber security weapon system. And so it sounds like a death ray that shoots across the internet and zaps anyone trying to hack in. I have a feeling that's not what it really is, though.
Yeah, I tried to weave in a reference to Skynet in the notebook this week, but it's really not that, and it's really not anything different than the rest of the military services are doing in terms of building both offensive and defensive cyber systems. What the Air Force decided it was going to do a few years ago was to basically start calling those systems weapons systems, and there's a very good reason for that within the Pentagon's planning, programming, budgeting, and execution process. Everyone sort of knows what a weapon system is and how it generates and how it gets funded and moved throughout all the programmatic hurdles that any program has to go through, whether it's a kinetic weapon or a cyber weapon. So they made that decision several years ago. Last week, we got the news that the first cyber weapon system in the Air Force's inventory, and they've named several so far, but the first one is called the Air Force Intranet Control System, and it reached full operational capability, the Air Force announced last week. It's a purely defensive cyber weapon. Its main purpose is to protect the boundaries of the Air Force's network that they consolidated a few years back under a program called AFNET. This intranet control system is going to, among other things, take about 100 different regionally administered access points, both in and out of Air Force networks, and collapse those down into about 16 gateways. So, you know, you're cutting down the number of potential attack vectors, obviously, that way. And the system also includes some additional tools for Air Force network managers to have a little bit better situational awareness over everything that's going on their networks.
All right, so let's move on, because you also mentioned something I think a lot of people will be touched by, and that is DISA trying to get the military services to cut the duplication in ERP systems, which represent millions of man hours of effort and, in many cases, billions of dollars.
Yeah, billions of dollars per year, and I have never seen a complete tally for what DoD is spending on all of its enterprise resource planning systems across the military, but it's definitely in the several billions of dollars. One of the reasons for those costs is there's, frankly, quite a lot of duplication in all of the systems that handle everything from, you know, finance to logistics to human resources, and they all tend to be built on, you know, relatively similar platforms. Most of them are either based on Oracle or SAP, and they've all kind of grown up independently. What's happening now is the military services, the Army in particular, has made the decision to, rather than hosting those huge ERPs themselves, to migrate them over the next few years into DISA's data centers. And so what DISA has decided is it doesn't make sense to just transplant these individual ERPs on a sort of standalone basis into the data centers if they're all coming in anyway. So let's figure out ways to leverage common infrastructure. I mean, if there are, in the Army's case, they're all running Oracle, basically, so there's no good reason that they should all be bringing along their own hardware and software and other infrastructure. They can use shared resources. And in this case, they're going to be using Oracle's custom-made clusters that are designed to run Oracle software specifically. So hopefully some cost savings will get wrung out of that entire effort once you're no longer running duplicative hardware that could just as easily be shared.
And will DoD take this opportunity to update some of the business practices that it actually conducts to better take advantage of the efficiencies that modern ERP can give an organization?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up, Tom. That's going to be one of the functions of this Center of Excellence that DISA is just now standing up. So in addition to the technical expertise that it's going to take to consolidate all this infrastructure, they're also going to have experts in sort of back-end business processes. And their main function is not going to be to tell the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, primarily the Army and the Air Force at this point, their main function is not going to be to tell them how to modify their business practices, but to understand sort of the legacy ways of doing business, the ways in which they've already modified some of their business processes to better fit the way this commercial software operates, and then make some suggestions, I think, to try and wring some more efficiencies out of that. Because as we've discussed many times before, the way that a lot of these ERPs fail or spiral out of control from a cost perspective is that the military services will try to modify the source code in the underlying commercial software so that they suit 30 or 40 years of existing business processes within DoD, rather than just changing the business processes so they make more sense with the software, which is all designed to help organizations run a bit more efficiently.
Any deadlines for all of this?
There's no deadlines for it right now. I was talking with one of the program managers for a program called IPSA, the Integrated Pay and Personnel System. They're hoping to have it completely, their own system completely finished within the next 5 years. And a lot of these ERPs are on similar time frames. So I think within the next couple, at least, you'll start seeing some of the migrations into DISA, but that won't necessarily mean that development on all these huge, huge ERPs are done by any means.
Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. Read Jared's Inside the DoD Reporter's Notebook online now at federalnewsradio.com.